Wendy's Coffee House, let's just say this is October ambiance. The focus is the paranormal. Spooky or not, I have a cohort, a cameo, accomplice, antagonist for this show. Big Bird. It's a stuffed Sesame Street toy. Big Bird. And he isn't usually as talkative, but today he decided to come out of the closet. And so you will be hearing from him a little more than we usually do. October. It's an active month. Here's a sample of Big Bird. He'll be making repeat appearances throughout the show. There's a doll who's exhibited at one of the stores in Weston, Missouri. And her name is... Thanks, Big Bird. Her name's Nicolette, all right? Nicolette at one point had a companion, but the companion was not purchased at the same time. Apparently, whoever was buying these dolls didn't have enough to get the companion doll, and no one knows what happened to the companion. But Nicolette is there, and she is ice cold, the ice queen. When they put her in the front window, the window fogged up, and I think it cracked the glass. Again, spooky or not? Big Bird's timing was impeccable, and just for point of reference, Big Bird is also a doll. A stuffed Sesame Street toy doll. Keep listening, you'll hear more. Hello, I'm Wendy, and this is Wendy's Coffee House. It's that time of year. For me, things seem to be more active. I mean, paranormal. Things happen, and it doesn't mean it doesn't happen any other time. It's just, it amps up, and I have more insight, sensations, awareness, a sense of presence that seems to be amplified in the fall. And I know I'm not alone, but I just wanted to mention that. So if you're feeling those kinds of things, fall is typically an active season. One of the things that let me know that for sure was when my grandfather died, and he chose to exit on November 1st, All Saints Day. Another thing that amplified that was that he was a World War II veteran. So his experience and his energy was extraordinary in that way. There's something different about the men and women who have served in some capacity in wars, whether past, present, future. There is an energy, and they seem to have a team that works around them. And those team members show up when they transition. My husband's stepfather also was a World War II veteran, and he had a pack around him, and I could hear them. They also had, there were lots of joke telling and lots of camaraderie there amongst these unseen fellas. And the thing that also was present when we had the ceiling fans on, there was this white noise. In the white noise, you could hear music. And the man's name is Ted. He loved the big band music. And so that was a constant when he was there. He would play those songs and tunes. Glenn Miller, you know, it was just the wonder of that presence in the white noise was fascinating to me. And also when I was there, I had dreams. And these dreams were completely foreign because they had Japanese characters. They had language that I didn't connect with, not my language, but language that would have been overheard by Ted and the guys he was with. His story, for one thing, is an interesting story because he, at one point, he was working behind the lines, and this is in World War II, and in listening to his stories and the stories my grandfather told, which my grandfather didn't speak a lot about this until the end, near the end of his life. But my grandfather said at one point that their sergeant, the guy who was leading them, was confused. They were going the wrong direction, and they were going back into the enemies, just right there. Instead of going away, they were going to be right surrounded by the enemy. And so what happened with that was that Andy's grandfather was working behind the lines, and he was fluent in German and able to do a lot of defense work. And actually, there's more to that story, but it's too long to go into. Anyway, he and the guy he was working with, they ran into the guy who was in charge of my grandfather's unit and convinced him, which it wasn't okay for my grandfather and his companions to do. It was completely the right timing because he saved my grandfather. And didn't find any of this out until later in life when I'm connected to Andy and learning about his grandfather and having heard the story that my grandfather told, that our lives interconnected there. The paranormal aspect of this is that both of those men had connections at their end of life. When I went to the hospital to see my grandfather, I touched him on his hand. And at that time, the energy of his body, as he was preparing to make this transition, there's an electrical charge that goes with that. And I had a bruise on my hand from that touch. And it was like, it was a shock. And yeah, okay, you get it. It unexpected. And yet it was also a very tangible bit of proof about that, what our body does as we transition, and that extraordinary energy boost rush that happens as we exit. And so that was there for me front and center that I could see. And with, there was some other stuff about that, but the other thing with Andy's stepfather was that he had a connection with an ex-wife. And so when I was asked about what was going on for him during that transition by his relatives, then I came up with the name and said, this person is there to greet him and helping them. And his language at the time was, I guess hell froze over. Because I'm saying that he's in transition, then I'm saying, well, this is what I'm hearing, and this is what he's saying, and this is a person he's talking to. I don't know all the details. I don't know all the names, but the names that was, he was greeting his ex-wife. She was there to help him transition. So, you know, I guess it doesn't matter our relationships here. Once we transition, we get over it quickly and remember, oh, yeah, you're not my enemy. You're my friend, a frenemy. And so these things, I think, are fascinating, and why I'm so interested in talking to people about their paranormal experiences. And, you know, if you just started listening to me, my paranormal experience has continued since 1997. I started having an interaction with an energy that blinked the night lights. And when that happened, I realized there was more going on. And so that started my whole transition into learning more about my own abilities, becoming a channel, learning to channel, and understanding there are a lot of pitfalls with that. And so some of that I don't even go into because it's personal. And not only that, when you start to channel, it helps to be discerning, because sometimes, you know, whatever the entity is, it'll come up and it'll pull your leg. And you have to understand, so how does this relate? How is this relevant? And you have to watch your ego, because some of this is extremely, it's a high in a way I can't describe, because you're getting a validation that there is more going on here than just the physical stuff that we encounter. And so in some ways, it's corroborating things you might have known as a child, things that people didn't want to talk about, didn't want to share with you. And as an example of that, when I was reading a story, it was recently in the Huffington Post, the woman is sharing her story about growing up in a haunted house she had no idea was haunted. She had some experiences with her family that then for the rest of her life provided an overtone of being afraid of going out in public, of sharing with other people, because she was always being told, don't tell anybody out. Sorry. Okay, we'll get into that in just a minute. The timing is interesting. There was a little sound, peekaboo. All right, again, I'll come back to that. But she was, and it's a way of keeping secrets that people who live in haunted houses sometimes don't feel comfortable sharing that story because of the shaming, disbelief, and making fun of, humiliating, all that good stuff that goes along with people who don't have a clue what they're talking about when they say it's not happening, it is impossible, and you are crazy. Okay, so those responses don't count. They have no idea what they're talking about. For one thing, if someone has had this experience, it's their experience. You don't have to share it to make it credible. It helps if you can listen. And if you don't believe it, no problem. if someone tells you this is happening, you can say, okay, wow. And if they want to tell you more, fine. You don't have to get dragged into the story if you say, I'm not comfortable with that. Just be honest. I'm not comfortable with that. Or it isn't something I believe. And let it go. But to shame or in some way, shape, or form, make fun of someone or put them down because of that experience is what these people are reacting to. And it's happened all over the world. This isn't something new. That's why people are so cautious about sharing these things and finding a public group that is accepting and has had these similar experiences before they will expose themselves to potential ostracization. I can't get that word, so just forgive me on that. Public humiliation, that kind of thing. Ostracize is what I'm going with, and my language is just not working. Okay, here, going back to the sound you heard earlier. When I first read that story in Huffington Post, and I'll share it, I'll put a link on the blog, the big bird I have, who is known for having his own ability to speak out and make noises on occasion, from the other room, the room I'm in now, I heard this little sound of peekaboo. He has more than that language, but that's the one he's sticking with right now. And I looked around to see, okay, what's going on? The sun is going in and out of the clouds. But that's happened before, and Big Bird didn't have any kind of interaction having been in that same spot. He's been quiet for quite some time. So now that he's decided it's October and he can perk up and come back to life, he's taking advantage of the situation. So if you hear in the background, the one thing that really is a good one that he might do if I encourage him is chuckle, because he has quite the laugh. So far, he's just managed to do his peekaboo. This time of year, I used to do for 9 years, I did an event in Weston, Missouri, Main Street Galleria. They do the ghost walk and dinner, usually 3 or 4 weekends of October. And before COVID, I would go up there and do a presentation and help tell the ghost stories. So the fun thing about that is that now that I haven't been involved in that, this year I was involved in another ghost story type thing. And this is Blackjack Battlefield, which is near Baldwin, Kansas. Now, I didn't know anything about that, and my Civil War, my memories of everything that happened in the Civil War are far gone. Whatever we were taught, and we didn't focus on it that much in school, there was nothing left. And I also, when I do an event like that, or go and offer to give a reading or information, sense a place, I ask that I am not given any information prior to the event. And that's when I started going up to Weston, and I had no information in advance. And so those kinds of things for me help me know that if I'm getting something that's authentic, it'll come through later. And I have to trust that whatever's going on with this is what I am given that is important to know at that time for whomever might be there. It might not relate to me, and it may not relate at that moment to someone who's there. But as time goes by, and when people return to investigate or re-examine the information, some things may fall into place. That's the very frustrating thing about doing a paranormal show, a paranormal investigation, a paranormal whatever involvement you want to have, like, you know, just a little bit of an overview of what's going on, because there's no specific time frame. We are not in the same dimension as these activities, and their time is not our time. So sometimes I'll get information in a dream that will give me a clue, or I'll have my guides, I do work with guides, will give me a hint and say, this is going to be relevant, pay attention to this, or listen here. And then someone may speak up at that time and remind me that these things are important. So all of these things that happen, the other thing I wanted to mention in terms of the Weston appearance, there's a doll, and she's beautiful. She's a doll who's exhibited at one of the stores in Weston, Missouri. And her name is... Thanks, Big Bird. Her name's Nicolette, all right? Nicolette at one point had a companion But the companion was not purchased at the same time. Apparently, whoever was buying these dolls didn't have enough to get the companion doll. And no one knows what happened to the companion. But Nicolette is there, and she is ice cold, the ice queen. When they put her in the front window, the window fogged up, and I think it cracked the glass. And the story on that might be in one of Verna's books. Verna Courts has a book on the hauntings of Weston. I guess I can link that too. Seeing her on the ghost tours, she's just a beautiful doll. And they have had to, however, keep her in contained spaces so she doesn't mess up the rest of the store. And the freezing that she does when it freezes the windows and they get little icicles on them is real. It's not imagined. It's that when she's in a certain spot, then there's a result. But those kind of things we don't have any explanation for, and you can't disprove it, and you can't prove it. So it makes it challenging. Going back to people who are experiencing these things, when I do these events, I have had people come up to me and say, I don't usually talk about this, but this is going on in our house, or this is something I have dealt with. And that sense of not being able to tell people, even for the woman who wrote this story for the Huffington Post, she said that her family members, her brothers didn't know it. Her mother finally told her after her father and her grandmother died, and she was going through all of these photos that, yeah, okay, so this is, like I said, he didn't start talking until I read this story, that this happened all the time she was growing up. And the constant warning, do not talk about this. This is a secret. Don't say anything about this. She felt she couldn't say anything about what was going on with her family to anyone else. She couldn't share it. There's a tremendous sense of isolation that comes with that. And Keith Linder is someone I've talked to several times, and he has an incredibly prolific encounter with spirits that he writes about and has had documented and had researchers give him some corroborative evidence so he doesn't feel like he's totally out to lunch. And the other thing is he's an IT guy, so he's been able to do a lot of his own validation by setting up the equipment, knowing how to read it, knowing what to do, and documenting it, taking meticulous notes and writing his books. He's also got a blog. And the thing that happened with him is, in the African-American community, he also felt that it wasn't okay for him to talk about this. And so that is another stigma that comes along with these experiences in your own culture, your community, if these things are continued to be taboo. Basically, taboo is the best word for it. If they are considered taboo, then you lose the opportunity to find out more about the information from other people who are also undergoing the similar circumstances. In Weston, I can't believe how active this guy is. In Weston, that was the thing that was so surprising. There were people in town having experiences. In some cases, it was okay to share. In other cases, they preferred that it wasn't spoken about. There was a bed and breakfast that changed hands a couple of times, and one of the owners was just fine. They made it public. The others said, no, we don't talk about this. This is not happening here. Even though for years, decades, it was known to have haunting and sightings and experiences. All of a sudden, those were taboo, not to be talked about. It didn't happen here, despite the laundry list of accounts that had happened in that space. So it really is interesting how people relate to it and the comfort level now that more people are able to talk about it, more people are sharing, and more people are beginning to understand that it doesn't make you weird and it doesn't make you crazy to have these encounters. It makes you sensitive. It makes you conscious. It just helps to go through and be conscious of these experiences happening. And this time of year, when all of the stories are front and center on hauntings and ghosts and spooky stuff and scary stuff, not all of this stuff is meant to be frightening. Some of it's meant to be eye-opening, just like this stuff that's happening right now under my nose, right in the same room as I'm trying to do this recording, hearing Big Bird in the background. A quick break. I'm Wendy Garrett, and this is Wendy's Coffee House. Continuing in this segment, talking a little bit more about Blackjack Battlefield. There are some things that happened there that I had no idea about because I asked not to be told. So we'll talk a little bit about one of those things. In the meantime, the videos are playing on YouTube, and you can check them out, Free State Horror Stories. I'll put the link in the description for the show. And here we go, segment two. When people cross over, transition, die, there are lots of accounts of then, at that time, their relatives having encounters. And they have them in many different forms, whether it's a spirit animal coming, whether it's a butterfly or a bird, those are very common, or a specific animal that person was connected to. Electrical anomalies, televisions turning off and on, lights turning off and on, clocks stopping, the list goes on. There are lots of different ways that people have reported contact from the deceased. My grandmother, when she transitioned, she gave me a song, and I had no idea that that song was so important and so relevant, but it was a song by a country singer, George Strait, "I Only Want to Dance with You." My grandmother was incredibly shy. She took a Fred Pryor course to help her with her shyness. She also went to Robert Monroe's, one of the first presentations by Robert Monroe, to learn how to do out of body. She said that was one of the things that she really regretted, that she wasn't able to actually make it happen. But that was one of the things that she had hoped to do. She used pyramids to help improve her awareness and energy. So my grandmother was in tune. And when I first heard my own spirit guides and I told my grandmother, I said, and this is what was funny, I was meditating and they said, "We are here." And I'm like, uh-oh. I heard the response. And I think this is 30 or 40 years ago. And I told my grandmother, and she said, "Just go slow. Go slow." But that's the best advice that I have been given, because like I said, there's a euphoria and an excitement that comes with this when you first make this connection and realize you are engaging with other beings, other entities, other realities. All of this is happening, and it's real. It isn't fake. It isn't phony. It isn't fiction. It isn't fantasy. It's real. And there's that sense of, oh, you want to tell everybody. And yet at the same time, you know that if you do, then they're just going to write you off as being totally nuts, or, you know, in some way, shape, or form, incapacitated because you're believing in things that are magic and fiction and fantasy and woo-woo. And that's a bad thing. No, it isn't. It just means you found an interesting diversion that adds more awareness to the things that are happening around you and gives you more avenues for understanding circumstances that might be complex, and underneath there's something causing a problem or creating an issue. When you go into a haunted area and you have emotional issues that are unreconciled, like if there's a tremendous anger or a fear, usually the negative emotions are amplified in that space. And so sometimes, such as a haunted house experience, people will begin to have arguments. They'll have more issues with not being able to sleep or feeling anxious or spooked. You know, that the fear factor is in many ways amplified. So those things happen in spaces that are more likely to be populated with multiple spirits, not just one. They tend to hang out in groups. They like attracts like. Or the space may already have been, you know, that there was a portal or some kind of an opening there where these energies are active and you just happen to be in that space. So I hate putting specific labels on things, because we all speak about this in different ways, and different labels mean different things to different people. So I try to keep it a little more generic and not attach a bad to anything, because we create our own in our minds, our imagination, our own monsters. And again, those emotions tend to amplify that energy. And so if you are thinking something ahead of time, very likely that will be mirrored or reflected back to you. The other thing, dealing with ET energy. I like the fact that John Foster, in one of his stories, he talks about being bullied. And one of the bullies, when the UFO appeared, I believe this is when he was in high school, when the UFO appeared, the bully was being abusive to the UFO. And the UFO shot it right back at him. If you don't attack, then you're given a pass. But when you attack, especially the ghost encounter, then you're going to get whatever you're putting out right back to you. So going in calm, centered, and peaceful gives you more of an opportunity to actually discern what's in that space, because you're not putting your own baggage out there front and center. You're saying, okay, what is here? And allowing that opening, that awareness, to give you space to make an accurate assessment of what's going on in the space. So the first thing is to clear your mind and get rid of your own baggage. And if you can't get rid of it, at least own it and understand I might be predisposed to seeing this as a negative entity, because I only believe there are negative entities. So everything out there is a negative entity. Again, I'm not attaching a name to this. And so with those beliefs, then you are only allowing that type of energy to reflect, to come back to you, to expose itself. Whereas if you're saying, I would like to understand what is going on in this space, can you help me? And leave it open. And then what comes forward, you'll be able to sense if it is a negative, a positive, a neutral, an antagonistic, or a helpful entity. And there's no way to know what they really look like. You can get an impression, but people have described ETs and angels in the same instance, because some people can only see ETs, other people can only see angels. It doesn't mean that they're right or wrong. It means that's what they're seeing. And so we go with that report of, okay, this is what this person is resonating, amplifying, engaging, mirroring. And it's your energy that determines what you are engaging and how you are engaging with it. So for many who do these kinds of events, their energy is key to what shows up. You can't calm a space if you're angry and all you see is monsters. If you see there is an angelic form available every space, all times, to anyone, then you can bring that energy through. But if you don't identify with that, and you don't resonate with that, and it isn't authentic, if you only put it on for show, you can't bring it through. So you have to walk your talk when you're doing this. And I guess I just wanted to get into this because of the time of year and because of what I saw and what I felt and what I experienced at the Blackjack Battlefield near Baldwin, Kansas. The videos are playing now. There's an intro, a tease, segment one, segment two, segment three, and segment four. The problem I have going to these spaces is I get a lot of energy that I can't speak, that I can't verbalize. It's just there. It's like when they say a download, that information is there. And so what I had to do with that information is blog, write, research, look up, why was this energy so intense? What is this really about? And the answer for me was that at this particular site, this actual place on the planet, there were multiple timelines crossing, multiple major events in the history of the United States, prehistory, history, because in this area, and you don't have to be right on that pinpoint marker, but it's the area, the region that will be imprinted and affected by all of these major events. There is that battlefield, which is known for triggering the Civil War in America. It's a trigger, not necessarily a death count, but that doesn't mean it isn't connected to the death count, because it was the catalyst. And so that's what was confusing to me, was all of a sudden I had all this death, a lot of death, and blood, and carnage. And that battle site is not known for that, but it's a flashpoint. And so all of that was a precursor to what came next. And if you look at wars and you look at this, the triggers and the precursors, it's the anger, the disconnect from reality, and the devaluing of other beings, whether they're animals or people or the environment. It's all connected. So all of that comes into play. And so then I'm picking up on the Santa Fe Trail. Why there? Well, the Santa Fe, that crossed through this property, the Santa Fe Trail. And the Santa Fe Trail has a history also of blood and gore, and it didn't always make the footnotes of the history books. But it's on the internet, in the footnotes of the people who had relatives who shared their stories and told the tales. And the Native Americans who also went across this space in one episode called The Trail of Death. The Walk of Death, the Death March, there's several, depending on who you get that from. But I had to do the research to put all these pieces of the puzzle together. And then we had the Underground Railroad, which also crosses through this area. So these are enormous pockets of emotion, of tragedy, of anxiety, of fear. And these pockets leave an imprint on the space. The land is beautiful. And they also have a prairie restoration project right there on that property as well in that area. But this region had massive amounts of conflict. And one thing, after I'm doing the reading and seeing what they put in the video, the woman's account of driving early morning through this area and saying, and of course she's anonymous, because again, this is one of those things you don't tell other people because they might think you're, you know, a bit Looney Tunes. So she prefers to remain anonymous. And in her story, she says it was early morning. And these are the between times, okay, dawn and dusk, the between times, where things are more, to us, more apparent. And what she saw was a bunch of guys in uniform sitting around a campfire. And then one looked directly at her. Now, for me, it doesn't mean they always see us as we are. They may have an awareness and see us, but not that we can have an actual one-to-one conversation. It's just an observation of what isn't fluent about this space I'm in. Something is off, just like she was seeing. Something was off. And there they were, just like they would have been in the time that they lived. And that was what I had seen when I showed up on the site, that these roles are still playing out because of the emotion, because of the energy, the anger, the fear, the frustration, all of that. And they're trapped in these moments and still continuing to play out their stories until this emotion, until this animosity, this anxiety, this stuff that we continue to build around it by worshiping wars and worshiping whoever was the hero and the victor, it's gone. And until we resolve those issues, these timelines, these storylines continue to play out. And the battlefields here for the Civil War are still active. Not in a way that we come across them in the daylight and we see them, but the in-between times and the months, like October, are times when we might have a better chance of glimpsing some stories that need to be put to bed, that need to be atoned for, that need to be made peace with, to allow them to go forward and to give us the energy to go forward. I appreciate you listening. There are some books that I'm reading and I recommend, and some interviews coming up. One of them, which is the way things work, we draw things to us when we're magnetizing our energy, the things we think about. So as I'm doing this stuff about the Civil War and the battlefields and the things that are going on and that resonate, I am given a foreword from a friend who says, I think you might be interested in this person. And this is one of the people that Walter Simkew had interviewed. And I have several interviews with Walter. He died in June. I just found that out. But he was a prolific researcher on reincarnation. So he had the images of people tying them to past lives and then trying to get as much information to corroborate that experience as possible. This is one of the guys that he researched and had information on, and we have videos of him, how he looks very much like the person he was during the Civil War. And he only had those memories as an adult and entering the battlefield site, where he remembered things about that battlefield that only someone who had been there would know. So that information is coming up. Again, I'll put a link. I'm not giving the name. Ha, ha, ha. Okay, another book on shadow animals. This is coming up, the author, because it's how animals that we are afraid of, that we fear, might have information for us. There might be a reason for that fear. One time I did a session for a woman who had a fear of cats and also was allergic to cats. As we did this session, she had no, any way, shape, or form reaction, no response, allergy response to this. And what was the reveal was that she had mouse energy, this constant, very anxious and needing to be moving all the time and detail-oriented, extremely detail-oriented. After she got that information, in that time, she was okay. I have no idea what happened after she stepped out of the house, but she needed that information to go forward. And so while she was given that information, the allergies went away. Coming up, gray aliens and artificial intelligence. The man who wrote the book is deceased. He just died as this book was being released. So the person who also did the research with him will be doing that. And you might have already listened to this one, Cold Winters, three of them at the South Pole. Wayne White, that's in the archives. He lives in a haunted house. Doesn't bother him a bit. It might intimidate people who go over. That's another story. My experience with Big Bird today was actually very unusual. And so I'm pointing that out because, to me, that's a paranormal element that I have experienced with this particular stuffed animal before. Stuffed toy. Big Bird. Yep. The Sesame Street Big Bird. That's exactly what he is. Paranormal stuff happens for us all the time. Sometimes we're aware of it. Other times it's innocuous. Like when I heard the noise in the other room, I actually was able to hear it. I didn't have my headphones on, so I knew what it was. And also the timing of that, reading that story about a haunting, and then recording this segment and talking about that haunting, then Big Bird chimes in again. Very, very, very coincidental. No. So those things I notice. So later in the day, my mom is visiting. My husband hears the doorbell ring. The dog, one dog, heard the doorbell ring, starts barking. The other dog didn't hear it. I didn't hear it. My mom didn't hear it. I go to the door. There's nobody there. Spooky or not? That's what the paranormal is all about. Sometimes it doesn't register because that's how normal it is. It's just a matter of if you're paying attention. I have two blogs. One is talkingtonightlights.com and the other is wendyscoffeehouse.com. I post links in the description for the show. Stay curious. This stuff happens all the time. Thanks for listening.